بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم What was the last chapter we read? Does anyone remember the number?
75.
Yeah, 75. So the next one is 88, obviously. So this is right at the end of the 10th canto. In the 10th canto, there are 90 chapters. The final one is a summary of Krishna's pastimes, summarizes Krishna's glories. There's a special glories mentioned in the 89th one. There's basically two parts. The second part is when Krishna retrieves, with Arjuna retrieves the son of the Brahmin who's been kidnapped, taken away at the time of birth. And this 88th chapter is also quite glorious. In the Bhagavatam, in the 10th chapter, in many places, it has showed the Krishna superiority to the demigods. In the 25th chapter, when Indra pours down so much rain on the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill and thereby gives the residents of Vrindavan all shelter from Indra. And then later on in the 28th chapter, Varunadev offers his respects to Krishna. In the 27th, Indra comes and offers his respects to Krishna too. And in many places, Brahma offers his respects in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto to Krishna. And also in these chapters, first Shiva offers his respects, and then finally in the 89th chapter, even Mahavishnu offers his respects. This is pastimes are so wonderful, but theologically, Krishna is being established as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this chapter, very interestingly, it's such a This is, has to be one of the cutest stories in the Bhagavatam, too. So this is how it begins. King Prakrit said, "Those demigods, demons, and humans who worship Lord Shiva, who is a strict renunciant, usually enjoy wealth and sense gratification. But the worshippers of the Supreme Lord Hari, the husband of the goddess of fortune, they do not enjoy in that way. We wish to properly understand this matter," so Maharaj Prakrit is asking Sukadev. "We wish to properly understand this matter, which greatly puzzles us. Indeed, the results attained by the worshippers of those two lords of opposite character, because Lord Shiva is completely renounced, living practically naked under a tree, smearing his body with ashes, having no home in that sense, and Krishna, we've heard, lived and has 108 palaces in Dwarka, where yet the devotees of Lord Shiva can become wealthy by his grace. And on the other hand, the devotees of Lord Vishnu, well, they get enough. Sometimes, of course, like we saw this with Prabhupada, that he was saying when someone is very very ready to serve Krishna, and we saw that with Maharaj Yudhisthira too. In the Rajasuya sacrifice, when someone is extremely pure, then all the wealth is, that they have is not seen, they don't see that, they don't view that as their wealth. And not seeing even the charity that they give as, here, I'm giving something of mine for your pleasure, like Bali Maharaj did, for what Bama did. But rather, they see that this is Krishna's wealth and he's put it in my hands and let me use it in his service properly. But most people, when they get, when too much wealth comes within their grasp, there's a tendency to become proud. And pride and devotion to Krishna are in opposition. They cannot, they don't work well together. And Mahaprabhu, of course, said, so saying, look at the examples he uses for the devotees to emulate grass and trees. What humble existences grass and trees have. The grass, for being stepped on, doesn't complain. That's what its business is, practically speaking. And then there's trees, people cut it, people take its fruits, people chop it down, use its bark, use its roots, its own body, every part of it is used. People use it as they like when it's living. People get shade from it. People get shelter from the rain from it. And they just give and they don't complain, whether it's hot, whether it's rainy, whether it's cold. They don't complain. And they keep doing it. So there's a tendency for someone who has wealth to be proud. So therefore Krishna is very careful how he deals with his devotees in this regard. But the devotees are always taken care of. But the devotees don't care. Is what it means to be a devotee, really caring only for one thing, and that's the pleasure of Krishna, the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, which is the natural position of the living entity. It's somewhat artificial until we have love for Krishna. That's what it really means to be a devotee. It's natural. When there's love for Krishna, one only cares for him. That's the meaning of love. So, Maharaj Prakrit is asking this question here. There will be some more explanation. We wish to properly understand this matter, which greatly puzzles us. Indeed, the results obtained by the worshippers of these two lords of opposite characters are contrary to what one would expect. The preceding chapter ended with the recommendation that one should always meditate on Lord Hari, the bestower of liberation. It means the last chapter is the prayers about the personified Vedas, which is a long and wonderful chapter. In this regard, Maharaj Prakrit here expresses a common fear among ordinary people that by becoming a devotee of Lord Vishnu, one will lose his wealth and social status. For the benefit of such persons of little faith, King Prakrit requests Sri Sukadeva Goswami to explain an apparent paradox. But Shiva, who lives like a beggar without even a house to call his own, makes his devotees rich and powerful. For Lord Vishnu, the omnipotent possessor of all that exists, often reduces his servants to abject poverty. What does abject mean? Complete. Full. Sukadeva Goswami will respond with reasoned explanations and an ancient account concerning the demon Vrika. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Lord Shiva is always invited with his personal energy, the material energy, manifesting himself in three features in response to the entreaties of nature's three modes. He thus embodies the threefold principles of material ego, goodness, passion, and ignorance. So this is Lord Shiva's position. He embodies, he's the personification of false ego, material ego. What does false ego mean? That sense that every conditioned soul has of being separate from Krishna is quite artificial. But there's a sense of existence that I exist separately from Krishna, that I have an independent existence from Krishna. And of course, there's so many things attached to that false ego. depending upon the modes of material nature, if someone is, the soul is conditioned by the mode of ignorance, he acts in one way, conditioned by passion in another, and by goodness, if he's conditioned, he acts in still another. But yet, common to all these is that that sense of being separate, but not only sense of being separate, but false ego is never innocent, just like I feel separate from Krishna, but rather false ego is an aversion to surrender to Krishna, and that's the cause of false ego. And even one of the proofs of this is not proofs, but one of the manifestations of this, how the conditioned soul would rather do anything than serve and be surrendered to Krishna and admit his understanding and live in his dependence on Krishna, that he would, even if he's very spiritually inclined and not even interested in material life, he'll seem to be an impersonalist. He'd rather become God and surrender to him. So that's probably called the last snare or trap of Maya, the tendency to become God. Even though you don't care about the material world, but you want to lose your, you want to lose your identity, not exist practically speaking, because that's what the impersonal realization is. It's non-existence of the self. No feeling of I exist, I am. So it's removal of the false ego, but being completely subservient to a different kind of false ego, in one sense, of I'd rather do anything, even stop existing, than become a servant of God, of Krishna. So Lord Shiva is the Lord of false ego, in three different manifestations. Lord Cricket continues. The 16 elements have evolved as transformations of that false ego. This is described especially in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. The devotee of Lord Shiva, from the false ego and the mode of ignorance, different the material elements arise from false ego and the mode of passion. The intelligence arrives, and I think in some other place. This is talking about the creation. In the third chapter, there's a whole quite a detailed description of how there's something called pradhan, which means the unmanifested primal elements. And by the, when the Lord glances at that, and glance contains the living entities, and that pradhan begins to manifest. It has everything in it, but it's undifferentiated. It's not that this, it's not, it's not, nothing is manifest from it. All the ingredients, see, like the ingrediental, unmanifested ingrediental cause. And by the potency of the Lord's glance with the living entities and karma mixing with time, then that starts stirring everything. And then based on that, variety begins to manifest, first going from subtle to gross. So the manifestation is, starts with false ego mixing with the three modes of material nature. Ahankar, false ego, false sense of existence, mixing with the three modes of material nature. And as it mixes with the three, false ego mixing with goodness creates the mind. And then as all these then gradually coming down in ignorance, mixing with the sense objects and the senses, and then an element comes out, and then everything springs from that, going from subtle to gross, the finer one being earth itself with the sense object of fragrance, and it's the sense of course, the nose. So Lord Shiva is the Lord of false ego. He's the predominating deity of false ego. Actually, the predominating deity of false ego is Lord Sankarsana.
Kimba Shiva as a devotee of Sankarsana.
So the six elements have evolved with transformations of the false ego. When a devotee of Lord Shiva worships his manifestation in any one of these elements, the devotee obtains all sorts of corresponding enjoyable opulence. Because again, poverty is the predominating deity. She's Mahamaya, Durga. So she controls the material elements, the feminine force. Controls the material elements, so therefore, when one worships Lord Shiva, she becomes an award. One out of her pleasure, some material opulences. But those material opulences, which are what people want, don't turn out to be the best of friends. Material potency, being able to control material potency, turned out to be the cause of our ruination. So that's what the pastime, the acute pastime, is going to describe. So Lord Shiva's benedictions turned out to be our undoing. Lord Hari, however, has no connection with the material modes. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-seeing eternal witness, who is transcendental to material nature. One who worships him becomes similarly free from the material modes. Purport. Lord Vishnu is situated in his own transcendental position, beyond the material energy. Why, therefore, should his worship be the fruit of material opulence? The real fruit of worshipping Lord Vishnu is transcendental knowledge. Thus, Lord Vishnu's worshipper gains the eye of transcendental knowledge instead of being blinded by material assets. The Lord being the detached witness of material creation, his devotees also become aloof from the interactions of the world's inferior energy. Srila Sridhar Swami cites the following passage from the Vedic literature. So there's a group of verses that I won't read the Sanskrit, I'll just read the English. When the absolute reality associates with the modes of nature, he assumes different kinds of form in this world, according to whether his spiritual qualities are manifest or not. Thus he acts just like a reflection, and it's further secondary reflection. The modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, whose individual natures are peaceful, violent, and foolish, are personally regulated by Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva, respectfully. Lord Vishnu's peaceful mode of goodness does not differ substantially from his original spiritual qualities, although it is only a partial manifestation of them within this world. As Lord Vishnu's mode of goodness is not tainted by agitation and passion or delusion and ignorance. So the modes of passion and ignorance, on the other hand, the original spiritual qualities of Lord Brahma and Lord Rudra are obscured, covered. Thus, these spiritual qualities appear only partially as separated material qualities. Therefore, focusing one's consciousness upon Lord Vishnu, the embodiment of all goodness, leads one to liberation. Thus, God consciousness also generates material success as a byproduct of its proper nature as pure spiritual ecstasy. According to their modes of worship, devotees of Brahma, Rudra, and other demigods obtain the limited success of material opulence. Eventually, they may possibly become qualified for full liberation. The same idea is echoed in the following statement of Srimad Bhagavatam 1-23. Shayam Sitatakalu Satyatanor Nrinam Siu. Of these three, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. He continues. And therefore, the King Yudhisthira, after completing his Ashwamedha sacrifices, asked Lord Pachita this very same question while hearing the Lord's explanation of religious principles. So I think the Aswa made a sacrifices. They took place just after Yudhisthira was enthroned as the king after the Battle of Kurukshetra, reinstalled as the king after the Battle of Kurukshetra. He asked Krishna this question, why is it? Because look what happened to him. They were such, the Pandavas were such devotees of Krishna. And they ended up with so many problems for so many years. They were exiled. And they had to suffer such humiliations. They were living as servants of the court of Varaha. So many difficulties they were in. So of course, each time Krishna protected them. But it's interesting how Yudhisthira asked that question. What's going on? You know, you're the Supreme Lord. You're the goddess of fortune herself is your consort. Lakshmiji is your consort. So why is it that the devotees of Shiva gain their opulences and the devotees of Vishnu sometimes don't? Although it's so interesting how we just read just a few chapters earlier how Yudhisthira was performed the Rajasuya sacrifice. But that happened after. So this question came, it seems, directly after the Pandavas' great period of suffering. This question pleased Sri Krishna. So he asked Krishna himself. The king's lord and master, who had descended into the family of Jaru for the purpose of bestowing the highest good on all men, the Lord replied as follows, as the king eagerly listened. Because he said, you know, when we begin something like this, and we have a dream that maybe even the devotees tell us that we just chant. Everything will be just fine. So we're thinking. We tend to think that everything will be fine on the material level, and we become disappointed. And this is because we're coming from a materialistic background, and this is the way that so many religionists teach and preach and understand. I once saw a bumper sticker in the United States many years ago. It says, "The Lord wants you to be." Something, maybe successful or something in the essence, successful, or had lines through it which meant the dollar sign. So he wants you to succeed materially, that's what he wants. That's not the Krishna conscious philosophy, by the way, as we find out in time that different things happen, you break your neck, who knows what's going to happen. But the devotees, amazingly enough, can transcend this world due to their attachment to him, and this is really shown in it's going to be shown here to some degree, but on a different level it's shown with the story of the Vidyadhara, who was Chitraketu when he was cursed by Parvati to become a demon, and he took it. He said, okay. And Lord Shiva said, Parvati, do you see the greatness of the Lord's devotees? Now do you understand? Apitu yata darshanam. That's swaga, heaven. Apavaga, liberation. Narak means hell even. Apitu yata darshanam. It's all the same. So they don't care. They have something so great and so deep. So fixed in that, that what's going on externally doesn't affect them internally. Just see the greatness of the devotees. And we could also, when we think in that, from that point of view, we think, just see how far I have to go to actually become a devotee. But it means fixedness. That's the beginning of it, complete fixedness. And you actually see this in all religious traditions, true religious traditions, that the practitioners, you know, the deepest of the saints and sadhus, beyond this material world. So even though they can be in the camp of the impersonalists, but the greatest strength, the greatest ones who are beyond any material world conception, or we see this in the lives of six Goswamis. They're so fixed into the depth, because so fixed means so deep. Like the depth of the tree's roots. So even in a great storm, powerful tree has its roots so deep, and it can move with the winds of life. That's why Prabhupada was walking by the Pacific Ocean, and Pacific literally means peaceful. So he said to the devotees, why is the ocean peaceful? Because it is deep. So, like an ocean, and even if there is some disturbance on the surface, and there is, even in the most peaceful ocean, has its stormy days. But you just go below the surface and it's unagitated. That means the relationship to Krishna is fixed and set. So the Lord replied to this question as the king eagerly listened. So this is very famous. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has some incredible comments on this. Let's see how much of it is included here. And then after that he tells the cutest pastimes. But first there's the philosophy. So Krishna himself replied, Yasyaham Anubrahami. Yasyaham means Yasya to whom Aham, I, Anubrahami means give mercy or favor. Harisha, Hari means take away. Harisha, Tadhanam. Dhanam means wealth. His wealth. So take away his wealth. To whom I want to show mercy. Shanai. Naturally. So Krishna, Srila Vyasadeva Sukadeva, finally spoke this at the 88th chapter, because if they spoke this right in the beginning, so they would just close the book and join somewhere else. But God wants you to be successful. Lisha Tadam Shanai. Gradually means gradually. Because it's not possible to maintain one's wealth in this world. That's the reality of the situation, because death confronts everyone. Old age confronts everyone. So we have to lose it. It has to be taken from us. So the devotees learn how to experience the shelter in Krishna, so that they alone will really be prepared at the time when it's time to depart this world. Then it's unavoidable. This ruins everything. Death is a grim reaper, a great destroyer.
Kalosman Lokasaya, it ruins everything, all our plans. Whatever we've accumulated, it rips us from them, our body leaves us. Usually we talk in terms of leaving our body, but the teachings of Paramahansa, one part where he said, the body leaves us. And the story of Paramahansa, and it's like that. So then, so Harisha, Tadam Shanai, does it take away his Nanam? So, obvious, it happens to everyone. But the devotees, it's Krishna who does it, not the material nature. He told Tadam. And then, Tata means then, Tadam. So, Dhanam means wealth, Adhanam means when he's poor. Tyajanti, Tyajanti means gives up. Asya, Sajana. All his family members don't like him anymore. They say, what are you, they're not taking care of us anymore? Sajana dukha dukhita. And he suffers distress one after another. This is Asyaham Anugrahami Hadisha. I look up, this is when I show him mercy. Imagine if he's angry at someone. So the devotees really have a unique way of looking at this world. They learn this amazing art of how to see Krishna's mercy even in difficulty. In the Bible, there's this story about Job. Such an amazing story. Have you ever read this?
Mm-hmm.
It's a wild story, isn't it?
It's also a devotee.
Huh?
It's also a devotee.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an amazing story.
Mm-hmm.
The way it's told in the Bible. Do they have that in the Quran also? Something about Job?
I've never heard of it.
Because there's like the devil in the Bible. Also in this year they have a devil, yeah?
Yeah. Shaitan.
What's his name?
Shaitan.
Shaitan. Oh, yeah.
He's Shaitan.
Yeah. So he's the bad guy who whispers all kinds of bad things in your ear. Tells you to do all the wrong things. It's very different, actually, from the concept of Maya. Actually, because the Maya is the reflection of Krishna, of Krishna's pleasure potency, actually. And her purpose is rectification. It's one of her main purposes. And she's not outside the Lord, she's not a fallen angel who somehow has escaped God's kingdom or something, is trying to set up a revolutionary government somewhere. Maya is like that. Hiding out in the hills of the material world, growing beards and eating chickens and gathering guns. Not like that. So, but in Job, the devil approaches God and says that, no one really is devotee, no one's really a true worshiper or anything like that. He said, yes, there is. Nah. And he says, Job is. And he said, yes, if you put a little pressure on him, you'll see he'll crack. He'll give up all his devotion, and instead of loving you, he'll curse you. If you take away the things that in this world he's attached to, because he's a wealthy person. So, it's like when children say, this is how it's told in a funny way, and when, I mean, not funny, especially for Job. But it's almost as if he says, God said, he is a devotee. And the devil said, he's not. He is, he's not. And he said, you want to bet? That's what they say in the West, or in the United States. You want to bet? If you have a disagreement. Okay, I'll prove it to you. So then God... And of course, how can he have a conversation with the devil even if he's not a person? So then he starts giving him trouble, Job trouble, and more trouble, and more trouble, and gradually takes everything away from him. And then, at the end, he has nothing, he has no health, he's lost his family, he's lost his wealth. But he doesn't crack, he doesn't give up his devotion. And then, but finally, the end is quite interesting. So, near the end, he starts asking, you know, why? He's praying and praying, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? You know, I've done everything right to all these people. Why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? And then God comes down, not as a blue boy playing his flute with his cows, and not as an old man with a beard, and not as a burning bush, but he comes down as, do you remember what he comes down? A whirlwind, like Vinavarta, something like that. And yes, the question was, why has this happened to me? Why has you done this to me? You're the Supreme Controller. And I've been so faithful to you. Why have you done this? And the answer is, I am the Supreme Lord. I control the sun. I control the moon. I do this. I control time. And he doesn't even... He doesn't at all say that I just made a bet with the devil or because you did something wrong. He says, I'm the Supreme Lord. You can't ask why. Basically, he says, none of your business. This is tiny, insignificant soul. What he's doing. He doesn't give a purport even like that. He just talks about his own power. And it was one implies the insignificance of the... of everyone else, he's just insignificant, like an ant asking why. What is so arrogant? Doesn't even address the question. And then after he passes the test, then he gives him back all his wealth and everything. It's interesting. He doesn't give him back his new wife. He gives him a new one. He already took her away. Why are you laughing? It's funny.
Maybe for him this was better.
Huh?
Maybe it was better for him.
Maybe. So here's the translation here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. The relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandoned him. It's also really interesting in the story of Job, and people come and preach to him, too, in the middle of all the suffering, and the preaching is all, it's all, you know, you're really suffering, and someone says, don't worry, it'll be okay, you know, the last thing you want to hear, you know, things like that, sort of superficial preaching. And the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandoned him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. Now, I'm going to read the verses on this, and then there's a long purport. When he becomes frustrated in his attempts to make money and instead befriends my devotees, then I bestow my special mercy upon him. A person who has thus become sober, sober means really seeing things in the proper perspective, not intoxicated by thinking these external superficial things are going to bring happiness. So a person who thus becomes sober, intoxicated person, he loses his perspective on reality. He doesn't see things accurately. So a person who has thus become sober, he realizes the nature of the material world, fully realizes the Absolute as the highest truth in the association of the devotees. So the person who has thus become sober fully realizes the Absolute truth, the Absolute is the highest truth, because if we're intoxicated by Maya and attached and enamored by the things of this world, we can't actually realize the Absolute truth because our consciousness is entangled on this lower level. So a person who has thus become sober,
Fully realizes the absolute as the highest truth, the most subtle and perfect manifestation of spirit, the transcendental existence without end. In this way, realizing that the supreme truth is the foundation of his own existence, he is freed from the cycle of material life. He realizes that his consciousness is everything. He himself rests on the foundation of the absolute truth. But he has no existence outside of Krishna's mercy. He's resting upon Krishna. So whether one is satisfied with that or not, that is reality. And whether one is satisfied with that fact or not, has to do with one's own consciousness. Prabhupada had given the example of a cat. He carries the mouse in his teeth and he carries his own kitten in his teeth. So one, the kitten experiences happiness and the mouse experiences terror. Rightfully so, because it means his death. So we are all carried by the cat of Krishna. And if we are beloved of Krishna consciously, then we are satisfied with that and accept whatever happens. And this has already been explained. Seeing Krishna's mercy in all that occurs and all that exists. Seeing Krishna as the foundation of all existence, in every particle of existence, in every thing that exists, seeing nothing as separate from him. This very, very deep Krishna consciousness is required to be actually a devotee and not being fearful in any circumstance. So therefore a devotee of Suryata Darsana, Narayana Parayana, Nakutaschana Bibhiti, he experiences no fear. That much faith, that much trust. And then one can confront the great open door known as death fearlessly. Because one is sees himself being carried to that door by Krishna, and knowing that Krishna is always with him, and he's the foundation of everything, even of time, even of death. Krishna says that time I am. So this is philosophy. The philosophy, our depth of our realization of the philosophy is tested at the time of living this world. Life is meant for practicing. So Krishna continues, because I'm difficult to worship, people generally avoid me and instead worship other deities. Will quickly satisfied. When people receive kingly opulence from these deities, you become arrogant, intoxicated with pride, and neglectful of their duties. They dare to offend even the demigods who have bestowed benedictions upon them. So, pride causes us, there's the English expression, to bite the hand that feeds us even. So he's going to tell a story like that. You know that expression?
Oh, I know that story.
Oh, you know the story, you know the expression?
Yes. No. Oh, yes.
Bite the hand that feeds us.
Is there like something that you cut off the branch to sit on?
Yeah.
To spit into the well that you were drinking.
That's gross. Yeah, same. Sukadeva Goswami said, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and others are able to curse or bless. Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are very quickly to curse or bestow benedictions, my dear King, but the infallible Supreme Lord is not. So, okay, so now here comes the story of the demon whose name is Vrikasura. It's such a cute story. But before, let us hear this purport to the verse Yasyaham Anugrahami. Yasya again means Aham means I, whom I favor, Anugrahami, favor or give mercy. Hadishya, take away Tandanam Shanai, I gradually take away out of my mercy, take away his love. So people don't like that, but gradually he takes away even everyone's body. When he takes away, then no one likes us anymore. No one likes the poverty-stricken man. There's also in the 11th canto, there's another story of the Brahmana from Avantipur. Also has this problem. And he sees that it's, he loses everything, but he learns to see Krishna's mercy in it, and he's happy in every circumstance. Because when happiness comes from matter, that means, by definition, we'll be happy, miserable, happy, miserable, happy, miserable. Not even just only miserable. We'll be happy, miserable. If we're only miserable, we'd get used to it and be happy being miserable. So here's the purport to this. Devotees of the Supreme Lord experience both happiness and distress, not as consequences of material work, but as incidental effects of their loving reciprocation with the Lord. Sri Rupa Goswami and Sri Bhakti Vasamita Sindhu, his definitive treatise on the process of devotional service, explains how a Vaishnava is relieved of all karmic reactions, including those that have not yet begun to manifest, aparabdha, those that are about to manifest, kuta, those that are barely manifesting, Vijna, and those that have fully manifested, Parabdha. As a lotus gradually loses its many petals, a person who takes shelter of devotional service has all his karmic reactions destroyed. That devotional service to Lord Krishna eradicates all karmic reactions is confirmed in this passage of the Gopalta Tapam Sruti. Bhakti rasya bhajanam tad iha mutya padi naras yena musmin mana kalpanam itad eva naish karmam. Devotional service is the process of worshipping the Supreme Lord. It consists of fixing the mind upon him by becoming disinterested in all material designations, both in this life and the next. It results in the dissolution of all karma. While it is certainly true that those who practice devotional service remain in material bodies and in apparently material situations for some time, this is simply an expression of the inconceivable mercy of the Lord, who bestows the fruits of devotion only when it has become pure. Bestows the fruits of devotion only when it has become pure. In every stage of devotion, however, the Lord watches over his devotee and sees to the gradual elimination of his karma. This despite the fact that the happiness and distress that devotees experience resemble ordinary karmic reactions, they are in fact given by the Lord himself. As the Bhagavatam 10:37:40 states, Vivad Uta Shubha Shubhayo, Shubha Shubhayo. A mature devotee recognizes the superficial good and bad conditions he encounters as signs of the guidance of his ever-well-wishing Lord. What do you think of this?
Yeah, it's very high. And then how does it apply? When you can understand that you're lesser,
well,
situation is situated.
Well, I mean, so.
I guess, I mean, how do you see it, or happens in distress and laying on a platform, right?
Yeah, well, but you don't see it, or we see it inaccurately, and therefore we suffer. We see it as due to my own self, or we see it as mostly due to others, and this and that, but actually it's Krishna purifying us and learning our lessons.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
Great in Krishna, but I never knew that again.
Yeah.
One question is, why does Krishna make it so hard? Make it such a high standard? Because the goal is so high.
Yeah.
The goal is Goloka Vrindavan. Not a cheap thing. We can't go in without a false ego. Right? Okay. We have to leave in the material world.
Mm.
We won't finish all the purport now, we're just reading actually not even a third of it. But we shall continue if it's willing tomorrow. But it isn't that
technical.
Very easy to talk about.
Mm.
Easy to preach to others about.
Mm. Hard to
apply.
To the
but at the time of death, what will anything else do?
Has to be applied.
So we know what the issues are. We know what the tests are. To keep it in mind, always. And this point is always applicable because everyone is always going through something or another. Until where. On the highest of highest levels, we have to become more purified. And what it means is there's two parts of it. One is giving up and one is holding on. Letting go and holding on are the different levels. So we have to learn both. So both are what we're learning, actually. So what you said, your question is, what if you're not on that level? So it means I'm holding on to something I shouldn't be holding on to, or not holding on to someone that I should be holding on to.
Yeah.
So, right. Or both. It's always both.
Right.
Huh?
Yeah. Right.
So therefore, when we're not on that level, we suffer by Krishna's mercy, the pains of one who's attached to the material world and not attached to Krishna. I mean, that's why Krishna's mercy, because we hear the philosophy. And we know what we should be doing, even though we're not capable of doing it. And gradually, we move towards it, or quickly, depending upon who we are and what we've done in our previous lives.
Yeah.
See, and this also answers, like in other religions who don't accept reincarnation. It makes it so difficult, more difficult, because the devotee is supposed to, he has to see that there's something, this is happening to me and not happening to others. So if I can't see that I've done something in a previous time that Krishna's so kindly minimizing, if I don't see like that, then it's all just him giving it to me out of his mercy, in the form of his whirlpool, and you know, don't ask. Why it's happening, and so it's actually much harder to deal with philosophically if you have a philosophical mind.
Absolute injustice.
Yeah, absolute injustice. Protest. I remember when after I started chanting, and I was still living in New York, and New York at least has intelligent graffiti and clever graffiti. There was someone on the subway wall. It was really during the 60s, you know, everyone would be protesting this and protesting that, abolish this, abolish that. So there was someone who had written on the subway, abolish compulsory reincarnation.
Do you
But anyway, it's funny. He had a sense of humor, at least. That's a real New York type of a thing.
Someone might ask, okay, what's going on in the case of a non-devotee? If something happens in distress, is under the modes of nature of the Lord's
Christmas karma.
Okay.
Samoham sabhabhuti suna medvesostinapya.
Yeah, right. And here we're hearing the highest principles applying to pure to the pure devotee.
No, not even pure devotee. Because the pure devotee doesn't have to, he's not taking medicine anymore. He's involved in his love, but as opposed to all devotees, even the beginners. That's what Von Ramachandra says. Sakradeva Papanam Yas Tavasmiti. Tavasmiti. Yeah, okay, so everyone think about it, because I don't want to go back tonight. But we can talk about it for at least until you leave. Yeah. But anyway, this is a cute story at the end. Okay, what's it on now? Yeah, it's something to really think about.
Yeah.
Usually, we forget about it very quickly. I see this. That's a wonderful thing to see Krishna's mercy in things, but if you don't have the depth of devotion, then quickly this point goes. Okay. So tomorrow we shall continue, because someone